I'm not sure if speakers in our tradition are at an advantage or disadvantage in being who and what we are. In the Christian denominations, they follow a thing called a lectionary, where you are told on any given Sunday what a Bible passage is and what you're supposed to speak about. And in the Jewish tradition, that is the same thing. There's a Torah commentary, which is supposed to be addressed on Shabbat, on Friday night, so the rabbi knows exactly what they're supposed to talk about. In our tradition, it's called New Thought. It's like, what do you want to talk about? I don't know. Your thought creates your experience. Okay, that's a good one. That's about all we got to say, so be careful what you're thinking. Beneath, above, around, enfolding that idea, however, there are an infinite number of opportunities. I had decided a while ago what I was going to speak about, and I was thinking about it, and I plot out my talks, and I make notes all week, and I rehearse them in my head, and then I woke up this morning, and I thought, what am I going to talk about that for? That's ridiculous. I think, oh boy, I better think fast here. What got my attention as I was looking at all my various digital communities that I participate in is that it is indeed Black History Month, February, and I'm old enough to remember when there was not such a thing, or anybody's History Month, or anybody's Pride Month. And I do want to talk a little bit about that as it pertains to all of our lives individually in particular. One of the things that we have learned to do, that we've been encouraged to do, that we've grown up doing, if we were 15 when we heard that song for the first time, Smile on Your Brother and Get Together Right Now, is that we've learned to celebrate diversity. This is a good thing. When we celebrate diversity of any kind, which, you know, even includes a growing awareness of the spiritual relationships we have with our animal companions and the intimate spiritual relationship we have with the planet that we live on. When we celebrate such things, it brings it to our awareness. We hope that, I sort of took that idea, that person, that thing, that community for granted previously, and maybe it would be good to know something more about it, and, you know, woohoo, whoopee, yay. You know, it's this month or that month or the other month, and that's a great thing. And some of the things that go on around it do bring information to our awareness, which is important, because awareness of the past, awareness of other cultures enriches our current experience of life. Absolutely. That's a great thing. Where we are at this time, I was going to say in the 21st century, 2015 really sounds like the future to me. I'm just kind of good with the 21st century. The aughts were kind of okay, and even 12, 13, 14 were good, but 2015 kind of sounds like George Jetson territory to me. we're into it now, you know? What threshold are we on now? Well, the threshold that we're on now is not only being aware and not only celebrating diversity, knowing that when we do that, that there's a certain level of harmony that is potentiated between communities. But that's not enough anymore. We have to be practicing inclusivity. How does your inclusivity awareness or practice show up? Now, what does that really mean? Is that just words? Is it jargon? Or is it really meaningful? It's really meaningful from my point of view. It's truly meaningful. It allows me, when I am attempting to mindfully practice inclusivity. It is not merely saying, you know, Happy Chinese New Year, which it was last week or something, I guess. You know, but like, well, what about it? What does it do for me? What does it do for my life? Why do I need to know this? Well, the first answer is always is that it establishes me in a larger context, which is what we used to call the family of man. And hopefully it takes me to a place where I realize that all distinctions are artificial. And any prejudgments, any prejudice that we have, which includes prejudice against ourselves and who we are in the world, is an artificial and it's a made-up thing. It is not the truth of life on this planet. There is, if we are to remain a vital, healthy, and functional planet, there is a place that we need to get to where we recognize that there is one race, that is the human race, and there's one religion which is practiced as kindness, and there's one life which includes all expressions of life everywhere. And ultimately, there is no hierarchy. There is no, in truth, in theory, and in practice, there is no hierarchy. That if humans have human rights, oughtn't dogs have dog rights? And if that is true, do rivers have river rights, even if there's no one to argue for it, or if it cannot argue for itself? And do trees have tree rights? Some of these seem, it seems very abstract, but it really is not. It becomes a practice. When this becomes the principle that one attempts to live one's life on, by, then one has the opportunity to always be in practice of some kind, of recognizing that there is an essential unity, and it is life, and all life arises equally, beautifully, magnificently, functionally, purposefully from the ground of being. We, as far as we know, are the only beings, though, that have certain powers which Thomas Troward talked about as initiation and selection. That we get to start and stop stuff, we get to make stuff up, we get to be something, even if it doesn't bless us, we get to be something other than our true nature, which doesn't usually help. If we're lucky, we come into friends who encourage us to live closer to our true nature. That's a good thing. It's demanding and complicated. But what is this practice of practicing inclusivity? What does it look like in my everyday life? Well, it affects the choices that I make in a variety of fields. But what it does is it invites me to draw closer to the thing that I am not, that I do not identify myself as. It invites me, when I can, to rest, as we say, on the forming edge of our lives. To not just stumble into the next moment, stumble into the next TV show, stumble into the next headline and go, you know, this is awful. They don't know what they're doing. Everything is horrible. That's violence. But if I'm attempting to practice inclusivity and to see all of creation and all people and all ideas, if I'm making that attempt consciously, it should invite me to draw close, to listen in a purposeful way, and to enter into a discernment about the words and ideas that I hear being expressed. Now, the principle that I live my life according to is the principle that I learned here, and that is the basis of all the traditions of the perennial philosophy, which, as I've already stated, that there is one thing happening and it's life and it is all divine. That's how I attempt to live my life mindfully, as if everyone and everything matters and has equal franchise. Do I have judgments as I encounter that? Of course I do. Of course I do, because there's a part of me as a human being that's going to be automatically fearful of whatever I call the other. There are parts of our brains that are hardwired for that. That if you don't look like me, I know you're not one of me, and I should be afraid of you because there might be some danger there. This exists in our nervous system. The most developed part of our brain, this part up here, is the thing that helps me overcome that. But just as an example of this fearful reaction, did anybody ever have an Uncle Milty's ant farm? Not a living soul. Thank you. So I got an ant. I was feeling deprived. I'd never had an Uncle Milty's ant farm, which is the great American ant farm that we all see pictures of. And you buy this thing, which is a frame, and you put sand in it, which is great. And then you send your proof of purchase to Uncle Milty in Newark, New Jersey, and they send you a little test tube with ants in it, living ants. And the instruction is open the test tube and let the ants drop down into the sand and watch miracles occur as a whole lifestyle is developed in the sand. And indeed, it is miraculous. But there's a warning on the test tube that says, for the love of God, whatever you do, do not put another ant in this. I know this is a little scary for a Sunday morning. I get that. But you're grown-ups and you can handle this. So I remember we did this when I had my office at Universal. We were working on Matlock. So I said, well, it says don't put another ant in here. What's the point? Why not? So we walked outside and we found an ant and we dropped it in there. Oh, the carnage. It was a horrible thing to watch. It was horrible. That as soon as there was something that was other, that was introduced into this colony, they mobilized, attacked, tore it to shreds. It really wasn't funny. It was awful to watch. That's a brain that is pretty much just a nervous system. That's the kind of brains that insects have, where they are only a nervous system. Well, you know what? We're that too. And we are hardwired for that. But we can override it. That's the gift we have. We can override that conditioning by a willingness to say, even if I feel that I should be afraid of you, I know that we have so much in common that there are, of course, other things that we have in common and that we are largely, mostly human beings. We share most of the same ambitions. But if I do not draw closely to somebody else because I have been conditioned to say, well, we know who we are and they don't belong here, which is the world that most of us grew up in, yes? That promotes violence. A separation which always leads to violent reactions. You know, really, in the Ten Commandments, you've heard of those, it says, thou shalt not kill. Well, thank God, there are very few of us here today that are serial murderers, you know. That's the good news. But the greater interpretation of thou shalt not kill also resides in finding ways to be kinder, more gentle, and allowing everyone's safe passage through my mind. And I don't know about you, but that's really hard for me. Because I disagree with so many people. But if I strive to stay in a place where I will always come back, I will always reset to know that there was one race, the human race. And my principle, as long as whatever you're doing allows me to experience my health and wholeness and does not diminish my experience of living, then you're totally free to do and to be whoever you want to be. We just sometimes artificially make up lines, and you say, well, your way of being is encroaching on my safety. But again, that's made up. That's made up. The great practice about being mindful is at some point, eventually, ultimately, to look at everybody and everyone's expression and go, yeah, I get it. Even when I disagree with you, there is a piece of me that's like you. That I am that too. I heard on public radio just yesterday as I was driving back from San Bernardino that there has been an ongoing study for quite a while that at MIT that class was broken up into two groups. One is prisoners to do role play work, and one is prison guards. And given the opportunity, everybody really kind of wants to be a prison guard and get in there and kick people around. Well, there's that in us that wants to do that. We need to keep that part in check, though. And everybody can do that. And there are better categories to be split up into than prison guards and prisoners. But recognizing that there's that thing in our nervous system that will always react to protect myself, even my imagined need to be protected. I always have the opportunity to make another choice. And when we take on these ideas and make them a spiritual practice, what we find, this is the experience that everybody has, that the more we attempt to live in accord with spiritual ideals, live in accord with a basic notion of practicing inclusivity, the more we do that, the time it takes to heal our fears gets shorter and shorter and shorter. So if everything was laid out across the spectrum, you know, at this end, you would have somebody who is always going to be unreceptive to other people and other ideas. And then you have this type of Jesus type person over here who's great with everybody and all are welcome to the banquet of life. And where do most of us, well, most of us want to be Jesus-like or Buddha-like. Most of us want to be that, but we're probably closer to the side. As long as we hook a bungee cord to our spiritual ideals, it might pull us towards that. And as long as we use the opportunity to make these choices, we will find that we will be happier in the long run. And that is the purpose. Because in my willingness to draw near to the other, to things that I don't know, it heals fear in general. And that's why it's to our benefit. And if we find ourselves to be less fearful in everyday life, such as it is, we will find ourselves to be willing to take more risks. And when we find ourselves willing to take more risks, we will be more creative. And when we're more creative, we are more self-actualized in the world. And when we're more self-actualized, we're living in accord with our true nature. I mean, this all makes sense. And that is how it works. We're not trying to be good for the point or just for the end of being good, even though it's its own reward. Well, I guess so. But the real reward is an enhanced experience of life that is creative and not violent. And that's when we really experience the blessings of life and become a blessing to all people everywhere. This is simple, yes, but it is not easy. I want to end because I was doing some research, and it was Langston Hughes who gave us this beautiful quote. The poem is actually called Harlem. And it begins, "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode?" The best way I can imagine in unearthing whatever dream it is, whatever aspiration, whatever idea it is that you have, the best way to unearth that is to begin a really active practice of living fearlessly in the world, being afraid of all others and our own judgments about what we're doing. And that way, I hope, when we get to the end of our time, we will not have any sense that we had deferred any dreams at all. And that's exactly where I'm going to end. God bless you, friends. Thank you very much. I surely appreciate it.